Dan Slevin is joining the show with his viewing recommendations for this weekend. And he's got some good ones to tell us about as well. But Dan, I thought I'd just start by saying thank you very much for your recommendation about The Diplomat. So I watched that whole series. We watched it and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great.
It is, isn't it? And yeah. now you have to wait at least a year to find out what happened in that amazing cliffhanger.
Exactly. I mean, talk about
really annoying.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Because it talk about it, yeah, absolutely saying, hey, there's another series on the way, but let's do this, you know. But no, it was good. It was well done. It was nicely done. Good production values and, you know, good cast and everything. So, no, it's cool. So
excellent. Well, let's see if I can do something similar. Give you a decent recommendation. We're not talking about series tonight. We're talking about standalone feature films that are on streaming. Partly because actually it takes so long to watch a series when you've got to do one of these segments every week. But also because I'm, you know, my heart really is in the feature film world. That was where I started reviewing, and so I do like to watch something that sort of has a start, a beginning, middle, and an end, shall we say, in one evening. And so the first one I want to talk about is a documentary. It's one of those celebrity biography documentaries, and it's about a living celebrity. And those ones I'm always a little bit wary of because there's usually been some kind of arrangement made, there's approvals required, and you don't know whether you're going to get the kind of warts and all sort of portrait of a character that you might want. And I'm here to tell you that the film Still, a Michael J. Fox story, which is on Apple TV Plus, it is very much a warts and all story. It's a very, very honest portrayal of Michael J. Fox, and it's but it's also heartwarming, optimistic, positive, and just a really fabulous movie all around. So let's hear a little bit from the trailer.
The story of me, take two.
Three, two, here we go, ready, and action.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
What did it mean to be still?
I wouldn't know, I was never still.
Here is Michael J. Fox.
What is the secret of your success?
And the winner is
Michael J. Fox.
I don't believe this. This is great. I feel 4 feet tall.
I get it. I was big. I was bigger than bubblegum. I woke up and I noticed my pinky. Auto-animated.
Parkinson's disease. I told Tracy the news. In sickness and in health, I remember her whispering. No one outside of my family knew. There was only one reason I took these pills, to hide.
Wow. I've looked at that one and thought about watching that. I haven't quite been in the mood for it because I feel like it is going to be a pretty emotional journey. He was such a superstar, wasn't he, as a young actor and so talented, a great guitarist as well, and you know, and then to have that diagnosis crushing.
Absolutely.
But boy, he's used it, hasn't he, you know, for a positive effect.
Oh, he's raised billions of dollars for research into Parkinson's disease. He since he, I guess, came out as somebody with the affliction, he's really turned it around and has, you know, he's testified before Congress, and he's really used that fame for good. I understand what you mean. I was wary about this for a couple of weeks before watching it because I thought that it was, you know, I didn't really necessarily want to get put through the emotional ringer the way that I suspected that it might. But it's actually, it certainly is emotional, but it's also really positive. And when I talk about that it's a warts and all portrait of Michael J. Fox, he doesn't hide from the fact that before he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, when he was the biggest star on the planet, and before he met and married his current wife, Tracy Pollan, he wasn't really very nice. He wasn't very good to his co-workers. He had an ego that was 10 times bigger than himself. Mm. Nobody would ever tell him to pull his head in. And he, I think, looks back on the young Michael J. Fox with something of a little bit embarrassed, actually, at how about how not great to work with that he was, but he was a tremendous screen presence, and some of those films are just fantastic to this day. Like Back to the Future has got to be one of the all-time classics. You know, if you stumble across it on TV, you'll always watch it to the end. And I'm a really big fan of the movie he made in New Zealand in 1996, The Frighteners, with Peter Jackson, which was shot in Lyttelton and Wellington. You know, at the time, he was the biggest star that had ever come here to make a film. And so I appreciate that he speaks really honestly about his troubles in those times, his emotional troubles and his difficulties. But the way that the film portrays his Parkinson's now can be really confronting. He's 61 years old now. He's had the disease since 1991, so that's more than 30 years. And he is clearly struggling, and he's struggling with his speech. And he explains that he has to take the medication, and sometimes the medication takes a while to take effect. He calls it waiting for the bus. You know, he takes his tablet, and then 2 or 3 minutes later, he can sort of start talking again. And you see him going through physical therapy as well, and you can see just how difficult it is for him currently to exist in the world. There's a shocking moment where he's out walking with his trainer, and he falls, and you can just see how easy that would be for him. During the making of the film, he suffers some quite major injuries: broken cheekbone and a broken collarbone, and I think he really wants people to know the reality of what Parkinson's is for people, but also that you can still live. Like, it doesn't turn off life. It doesn't turn off your relationship to your family, and it doesn't turn off your creativity and your brain. A lot of it's done with interviews. The director is a guy called Davis Guggenheim, who hasn't made very many documentaries, but they've all been awesome. Like An Inconvenient Truth is one of his, and he spends a lot of his time making political films for Obama and Biden and people like that. And so he spent a lot of time with Michael J. Fox doing these interviews, but also a lot of the voiceover comes from an audiobook of his own autobiography that was recorded a few years ago, and you can hear the difference in Fox's voice from a few years ago when he recorded the audiobook. He wouldn't be able to do that now. He wouldn't be able to sit and read his own writing back for any length of time. He just doesn't have that. But he's indefatigable and still very funny, and the love of his family, the love of his wife, is really, really positive. And I think that I think the message of the film is that we shouldn't write people off just because they have got a disease or they've got a disability or that they've somehow changed in our perception. You know, that doesn't mean that they're not the people that they always were. They're just physically maybe a little bit different. And I really appreciated this film, and he is just a terrific character to be around still at the age of 61.
I do admire the fact that he did keep working as well until relatively recently. I mean, he'd turn up in various projects, wouldn't he? And, you know, he could have been forgiven for just disappearing, but he's actually proved such a point.
But also when he was diagnosed in 1991, he was a very heavy drinker, was a very heavy smoker. He was he was one of those people that had real imposter syndrome about his own success, and because he was an untrained actor and the success had been thrust on him very, very quickly. And the doctor said, "Well, look, you might only be able to work for 10 more years before this takes your physical ability to do this away." And so he just signed on for job after job after job as quickly as possible to try and put as much money away for his family as possible, and refused to tell anybody what was happening. It took 6 or 7 years before he was able to come out with it. And there's a long section of the film where they cut together bits of his work during that period where once he explains what he was doing to hide the symptoms, you go, oh, right, that's why your left hand was always in your pocket. That's why you were always playing with a pen. That's why you were, you know, like he had learnt these tricks to stop people seeing what was going on. Yeah. The film itself is kind of interesting in that it uses lots and lots of clips from his films to tell the story. So you've got his voiceover telling you about a thing that happened, and then they'll use a clip from The Secret of My Success, perhaps, or Back to the Future, to kind of illustrate it. And and the brilliant choice of lines and moments and looks, it's almost as if his past self is acting in his current film, if you know what I mean. Yeah. It's so cleverly done. I usually hate recreations in documentaries. I think they're kind of fake, but this one uses them really, really cleverly, along with the previous clips from his past films. And I forgive things that I wouldn't normally in this particular film because it's handled so cleverly.
Now, we must move on because I want to get on to the next one as well. But that sounds good. I just wanted to mention as well as another one on Disney Plus, Ed Sheeran. I don't know whether you've seen that.
The live gig.
Yeah, no, it's 4 half-hour episodes about him, and it's not what you expect either. Very similar. It's very real and very honest, and it's about, some terrible incidents. He lost his best friend, Jamal Edwards, and his wife was diagnosed with cancer. And again, you'd think, oh, gosh. But you sort of you start this thing looking about the life of Ed Sheeran, and it just takes you on this other journey. You know, they're only 4 half-hours, but really good.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, when you see something like that and you realize that the people that you see 100 feet tall on the big screen or as loud as life in your stereo, when you realize that they're just human beings that have exactly the same fears and disasters and challenges as everybody else. I mean, it's kind of a cliche to say that it humanizes them, but actually it's a really useful thing to understand that those people are not necessarily living on a pedestal the entire time.
Yeah. Now, why do we need another Peter Pan movie?
Well, it's an excellent question. And before I watched it, I might have thought that this was another of those examples of Disney just wanting to reinforce their intellectual property, I guess. You know, they've got this program of live-action versions of their famous animated films. And for a lot of reasons, it's there to make sure that copyrights don't expire. But this new film, Peter Pan and Wendy, which is sort of inspired by the 1954 animated film, but also the original J.M. Barrie play from the before the First World War, it's the copyright situation is really interesting with this because Disney actually don't own the copyright to it. The Peter Pan character is out of copyright, except in one particular instance that J.M. Barrie in the 1930s gifted the copyrights to the stage play and the original novel to the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London. It's a children's hospital in London. And there was an Act of Parliament passed in 1988 to make sure that that copyright stayed in perpetuity. Normally, copyrights expire 70 years after the death of the author. But this one copyright, it's the only one in the world that's like it. If you want to do the stage play or if you want to do an adaptation of the novel, then you will have to pay Great Ormond Street Hospital to this day. Wow. Anyway, Disney don't own the copyright, but they still love the characters. And this is, I think, a really good example of something that is a really good family film. Mm-hmm. I think that some of those previous Peter Pans really are dated, especially in their treatment of indigenous characters. You know, I know we're talking about Children Who Can Fly, etc., but you know, we still don't want stereotypes on our screen. And this I think, much more sensitive. It's much more softer about the character of Captain Hook, played by Jude Law. Really lovely performance from him. And it also, as a lot of the adaptations of Peter Pan have been in recent times, focuses a lot more on Wendy. So it's not just about a selfish little boy who refuses to grow up. It's also about a adolescent girl who's on the verge of adulthood herself and is also sort of being confronted by those challenges. And I would say that this is a good film for families, especially if you sit down afterwards and you just ask your kids, well, what is Peter afraid of? Mm. Why does Peter not want to grow up? Because kids will tell you that they look at parents and they go, you don't look like you're having fun. Why would I want to do that? Mm. It's totally understandable to not want to grow up when being a kid is so much fun,
yeah, exactly.
And being an adult isn't, obviously. So I do think that this is definitely worthwhile. It's directed by David Lowry, who made Pete's Dragon, which is one of my favorite Disney remakes of recent times, which was made here in New Zealand. And I know that there's been a bit of negativity about this one, but I do think that anybody who is negative about this because they're clinging to the past needs to let it go. You've still got the old version. You can always watch the animated version. No one's taking it from you. But this adds something a little bit different to it, I reckon. And I do recommend it. It's a family film and should be watched as a family and then have a discussion about it afterwards.
Dan, fantastic. I'm sorry we can't talk more about this. And, of course, the Dock Edge Festival has begun as well, but perhaps next week we can touch on that. But thank you so much for joining us and those great recommendations.